Hi, and welcome back to the Mindful Sport Performance Podcast. I'm Dr. Keith Kaufman.
And I'm Dr. Tim Pinnell. And today we have on the pod, Marcy Robles. Thank you so much, Marcy, for being here. Marcy is currently in her third year as the head coach of George Washington University's women's crew team. Prior to her coaching career, Marcy was a coxswain on the men's crew team at Boston College. And since then, she's held several different coaching positions, including assistant coach on the women's crew teams at Rutgers University, Gonzaga University, and Georgetown University, and as the men's head coach at Jacksonville University. Through her career, Marcy has been no stranger to championships. She won the Head of the Charles in 2008 in the women's Club Four for Riverside Boat Club. And she also had her teams win conference championships when she was at both Gonzaga and Jacksonville. Marcy, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you both for having me.
And I should say, importantly, another note is that Marcy and I have been working together for the past 3 years, implementing MSPE with her team. So very excited to talk about our experiences together. But as usual, we'd like to start off with a brief meditation, which I'll be leading us through today. This will just be a brief breath counting meditation. So kind of a similar to a standard breathing meditation, but gives your mind kind of this additional thought anchor where you're actually counting your breaths up and down. I just encourage people to keep in mind the subtle tug to want to get to a certain number. What I'll lead everyone to do is count up and down to 10 and back down to 1. And I think it can be compelling to want to get to 10, right? But just, I'm going to encourage everyone who's listening to notice that pull and really be curious about why would we want so badly to get all the way to 10? And as usual, if you are in a situation where closing your eyes is not available to you, please be mindful of that. Please be careful. Probably don't do this while you're driving. But if you're in a quiet place, certainly feel free to settle in and close your eyes. So wherever you are, go ahead and just feel yourself begin to ground. Whether you're standing or sitting or lying down, just note the points of contact between yourself and the earth. As you settle in to whatever position, if you feel comfortable, you can let your eyes close. Or if that's not available to you for any reason, perhaps let your eyes just be downcast, just over the tip of your nose. And begin with checking in with your body, expanding your awareness from those points of contact. Maybe it's the soles of your feet on the floor, the backs of your legs, or your lower back on the chair. And from those points of contact, let your awareness rise up through your body. With each in-breath, just checking in, noticing what's there, what perhaps temperature sensations, maybe feelings of tightness or looseness in your muscles. What's there in your legs? What's there in your abdomen, upper torso, in your arms? And just noticing the shoulders and neck muscles, the facial muscles, all of these places, we can often hold tension without even being aware. So if you happen to notice that as you're just checking in, maybe you choose to take a deep breath and let go of some of that tension. And once you've scanned your body, bring your awareness to your breath. Choose some sensation that feels connected to your breath to serve as your anchor. Maybe you feel the sensation of expansion in your belly or your chest as you inhale. that sense of deflation as you exhale. Or perhaps it's sensations more around your lips, nostrils, the feeling of the air coming in, going out. Or maybe it's simply just a field of sensation. Whatever is being experienced as you breathe in and out throughout your body. Allow that sensation to be your anchor. Allow your attention to rest there. And when it wanders, because it will, just notice. Notice what has pulled your attention away, perhaps even acknowledging that it's important, and then choose to bring your attention back to the breath, to this moment. And if it's helpful, perhaps even include counting your breath. As you inhale, say silently to yourself, inhale, one, and exhale, one, inhale, two, exhale, two, all the way to 10. And when you reach 10, simply count back down to one. Again and again. And if as you're counting, you find your attention wander, perhaps even losing track, not being able to remember if that was the third breath or the fourth breath, simply start back at one. There's no need to get to 10. The counting is simply an anchor. We don't have to just ascribe any meaning or sense of success or achievement to counting all the way up to 10. Keep in mind, it is simply an anchor to the present moment. Continuing to stay tuned in to your breath, observing all of the ways that our mind gets pulled away, and meeting yourself with some compassion. Just acknowledge the nature of our mind. Acknowledge the intention that we had when we sat down, to choose where we put our attention. Maybe even inviting in a sense of appreciation for yourself for having sat to do this practice. And then just return to the counting. In breath, one. Out breath, one. In breath, two. Out breath, two, and on and on. And as we get ready to bring this meditation to a close, let your awareness let go of the breath, return into your body, maybe wiggling your fingers and your toes, feeling some movement in your muscles. Coming back into the room around you. Maybe taking a few deep, full breaths, big inhales, full exhales, pushing all the air out of your lungs, making room for that next deep breath. And when you feel ready, you can sit back and open your eyes.
Thanks, Tim. Appreciate you leading us today.
Yeah. Yeah, really helped me relax. So that was nice.
So, well, yeah. So as you said at the beginning, we're really excited to have Marcy on our podcast today and to be able to talk with her about some of the work that you guys have done together. And of course, she's an athlete herself as well as a coach. And so just to talk with her a little bit about her work and her experiences. And I've heard some, of course, you know, Tim and I talk regularly about our work as well, but I'm excited to hear from Marcy too. This is the first time I'm going to have a chance to talk with her. So thank you so much, Marcy. We really appreciate you making the time today for us.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to dive into this as well. It's been such a valuable tool. So I appreciate the both of you making the space for me.
Yeah. Well, and so as we kind of outlined in your bio, you've had a number of coaching positions. You've been in the rowing world for a long time. So maybe kind of a place to start was, you know, where along that journey did you start to get curious about mental training?
Yeah. So a few years ago, we actually had Tim as a keynote speaker at a rowing convention that my former counterpart here at GW, the former men's head coach, puts together every year. It's called the Gym Joy Conference, and it's up in Saratoga Springs in New York. And Tim was a keynote speaker. And I hadn't really taken a deep dive into mindfulness at all until that point. And I think everyone came away from that session pretty blown away. We spend so much time talking about training, so much time talking about the technical aspect of the sport, so much time talking about equipment and how to set, you know, all the physical things in place. But this was really the first time that I had been a part of a session where we addressed the mental aspect of it. And we all know and agree that the mental piece of a sport like rowing is huge, but no one ever does anything about it. No one ever, at least not to my knowledge, invests the same kind of time in working through that you do in the physical and technical aspect of the sport. And so in, you know, having conversations with Mark, our men's coach at the time, and knowing that Tim was local, we ended up meeting up for lunch and started chatting. And I was like, you know, it was my first year at GW. And I was like, I think this is something that I think could, you know, really benefit our team and just maybe give us an advantage and a leg up in terms of being able to work a different muscle, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Right. And strengthen something that I knew that not a lot of teams were working on, at least not that I had heard of. So yeah, it was a really exciting opportunity to just introduce something that we knew was going to pay off in the short term and the long term as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're naming something so important in that, like, oh yeah, we all get that this is really important, but none of us do it, right? No. We see that so much across sports. It's something we call the mental training paradox. But like, yes, all athletes, all coaches really recognize the importance, the value of the mental side of things. But I think there's a knowledge gap. You know, people, coaches don't always know how to do it or don't know how to access the people who do know how to do it. And then if you're bringing someone else in, right, it's like, I think sports can be very insular and it requires a lot of trust. So there's a lot of obstacles sometimes to bringing in kind of integrated, like, mental performance stuff. And so I really appreciated your openness to it. And like our continued work over these last couple of years, I think has allowed us to do like a lot of really cool stuff with the team, which obviously is something I would love to hear you talk a little more about. Like, what, you know, looking back on these past 3 years, you know, do you feel like, I don't know, well, how do you feel like it's worked out?
I think it's been so valuable. And I think it certainly helps too that, you know, Tim, you're a former rower yourself. And so being able to speak the language that our athletes speak. And I remember there was one session you came in and you referenced the workout 5x5 minutes, and we had literally just done that workout. And so all the athletes were groaning, but there was such a connection that was made there because they, you know, like there was an immediate trust that was established right away, just in knowing that you could relate to them. And I think for a sport like rowing, that's not, you know, we're not televised. You don't get a ton of spectators. We're just sort of out in our own little corner getting meters in, you know? And so for you to be able to relate on that level was a huge part of, I think, our success in working this into our training. You know, that first year, we only worked together that spring, and seeing how the team shifted from, because Tim joined us right when we were in the thick of winter training. And that is the worst part of the year. You are getting in a ton of meters. It's generally pretty cold, so you can't get outside in boats necessarily. And it is just a grind. And to bring, you know, Tim, you into that scenario and, you know, just kind of spice things up a little bit, do something a little different, and use that opportunity when, you know, things are hard to sort of take a step back and introduce a new tool and let them sort of feel that out as we're getting closer to racing season, as we're trying to get through this, you know, slug of winter training, was so helpful. And I think we saw results pretty immediately with rowing, and our training is tailored this way. It's so important to give our athletes a sense of control. And there are very few sports, I think, where you have data and feedback staring you in the face every time you move. And I think that can be really, I know that can be really daunting. And there's such a creation of expectations and pressures, and it makes training on the rowing machine, you know, difficult. There's a lot of anxiety around it. And so the mindfulness training coupled with the way in which we set up our own training, I think they just paired really, really well. And I think the athletes also appreciate having the space to sort of just back up and create space for yourself. And there've certainly been instances when we're out on the water, it's a little more fun than on the rowing machine, but you know, you get out there, the warm-up's rough, you know, maybe the weather conditions aren't great and you're just having to like tough through it. And it's just, you know, the boat isn't connecting. And there's, I've actually had a couple athletes recall this memory and as one of their favorites, where, you know, we were about 30, 40 minutes into practice. And I just stopped everybody. I was like, you know what? We're going to take a minute. We're going to channel Dr. P. We're going to take a minute. We're going to close our eyes. We're going to sort of anchor ourselves, get, you know, sort of be in tune with where we are, do a quick body scan. And we just created that space, and the rowing after that cleaned up so well. I mean, you know, and everyone was able to just sort of, I think, remember why we were there, right? And remember that it can be fun and that we have choice. And so being able to introduce mindfulness training and sort of go back to those tools and create more habits when it comes to, just building that awareness really helped boost confidence to the point where our conference championship that spring, my first year, our top boat came off the water. We finished second across the board in our scoring boats. Our non-scoring boat won, which they were, you know, reigning champions the year before. But our scoring boats came in second, and that was the highest finish the team had had in a long time. And it was close. I mean, I think we met, if not exceeded, expectations. It was the best that team could have done. And that varsity eight came off the water. And the first two comments were, we've never been so confident sitting at the starting line. I mean, usually you're sitting there, you're waiting for everyone to get lined up, waiting for the officials to start you. And, you know, sometimes I've been in situations as an athlete where where my stomach is not feeling well. And there's just so much anxiety there, but they were in complete control of what they were doing and of where their minds were. And so they came off the water, acknowledged the confidence piece. And in response to that, we had another athlete say, all the work we've been doing with Dr. P and mindfulness, like there's no way we could have been at this point in terms of confidence level and just having fun if we hadn't done this work. And that, I mean, that was incredible to hear. And we had known it was working, but to be able to put them in that high pressure situation, have them perform as best as they could to come off the water and say, hey, this is really valuable. I was like, we have to keep working with Tim. So, you know, it's been really, really great. I think for us continuing to create that structure and create that space so we make it a habit, right? And aren't just waiting until we sort of need it to implement these tools, but really make it a part of the training is something that we're working on. But yeah, we've seen it pay off quite a bit.
That's awesome. And of course, it's just like wonderful for me to hear. And there's so much, I think, in what you said that I would want to respond to. I think just a couple of things are the things that are kind of the forefront of my mind, just that kind of, yeah, how much gets loaded onto the erg or the starting line or like the anxiety that's there. Even when you said the words 5x5, I had a chill in my body, right? When you talked about being on the starting line, I had memories of sitting there and like that one annoying boat who like can't scull it around, right? And so you're sitting there waiting and you're ready to go and the officials can't start you and you're just sitting in all those nerves. And like, yeah, to feel confident in that moment takes training, takes practice. And I remember being in those situations, not having had those wishing looking back that I had that kind of training.
Yeah, absolutely. And in a sport too, where so many things can go wrong, whether it's with equipment, with weather, you know, I think it really was sort of good prep for managing this pandemic, right? And in that, I think understanding the illusion of being in control. And, you know, we've talked about this as a team, right? Where being able to sit there and choose, right? And identify where we have that control and understanding that, you know, if we are practicing as a team and we have the speaker going and you didn't come up with the playlist and there's a song on there that's like not your jam, you know, you can't do anything about it. Are we going to really let that ruin our practice? Or can we just sort of sit with it and say, it's a 3-minute song. Like, I can ground myself in what I'm doing and choose how to react to that. I think has been something we're still working on, but it's been good. It's been really good to just have language to put to that. Right. And there's no way I could have come up with that on my own. And so with the training that we're doing with you, Tim, I think having that language to sort of call attention to what's happening. You know, it's not like those situations are new. They've always existed, but now we can address them instead of just sort of glossing over and not really investing the time to strengthen that part of our experience.
Yeah.
I had a thought based on what you were saying before, and I think you might have just answered it, but I guess just to expand on it a little bit, you had mentioned control in there a handful of times and confidence, right? Two important C words to any athlete. And you know, speaking about how mindfulness has made a difference, I guess what I was going to ask is, from your perspective as coach, I know that you're not in the heads of all of your athletes, but from your perspective, what about mindfulness and the training that you've been doing with Tim has translated into that greater sense of control, that greater sense of confidence? And again, I think you just spoke to that a little bit in talking about choice, another C word, right? That I think we emphasize quite heavily, but I wanted to give you a chance to expand on that, because I think that's such an important needle to thread for anyone who's listening, any coaches, or, you know, we're a bottom line world, right? With performance and confidence, you know, everyone who calls me, I know in my brain, I want to feel more confident, right? That's what everyone wants. And so from your perspective, what do you think it was about this that facilitated that?
I'm going to go with that C word, choice. And I think highlighting the fact that there is choice and that is empowering to get to choose. And we talk a lot about empowerment. We talk a lot about sort of owning what we're doing. Things don't happen to us. We get to move through the world with intent. And you know, being able to sift through what those choices are. Right now, we don't really have a choice as to whether we're online or in person. That has been decided for us, but we're fortunate enough to be in DC and on campus and practicing, right? And so how we choose to come into our space, how we choose to interact with our teammates, how we choose to approach our workout. I think for, especially with this generation of athlete, I think that choice and that empowerment and creating that sense of control goes so far, right? And when they sit down on the machine, they get to choose where they take their workout. And that's how we structure our training. It's more of a focus on where we're starting and what is an appropriate place to train, as opposed to you need to be here at the end. And I think for us, it's been so valuable to distinguish between the two, because having an end goal is great. It also has to come from them. I think as coaches, if we sort of impose this expectation, that's where we find ourselves in trouble, because if we don't meet that, then we're a failure, right? And then it's this vicious spiral of I'm not good enough, I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm letting people down. Where if we create a sense of control from the beginning, and it's like, okay, this is where you're starting, but you get to choose how the rest of the piece plays out, right? Either you stay at this speed, or if you're feeling good, you go a little faster, right? And getting to choose to go faster is so much more fun than feeling the pressure of I should go this fast, and then not meeting that moment and not appreciating the work that you're putting in. And so that sense of choice, it is just such a game changer.
Mm, I love that answer. To any coach who's listening, that right there, right? I mean, that is so important. And I mean, I can't tell you how many coaches or how many athletes I encounter who have coaches where they don't take that approach. You know, they do take that outcome-based approach, the fear-based approach. And I think in many cases, it's well-intended, right? They want their athletes to do well. But I think the way you're explaining this, Marcia, it makes so much sense, right? It's like that freedom, that choice, letting the outcome flow from those choices. And I like, let's emphasize the beginning and where you go from here. That is incredibly powerful, I think.
Yeah. And it's like, I think it also speaks to the importance of you as the coach, as the authority figure, modeling like that we have choices, right? That we can do it differently. I mean, I think that example you had given about like you're out in practice and, you know, it's not going well and you're like, all right, let's stop and just breathe. Right. Like it immediately makes me think of I remember in college, my freshman year, it stands out very vividly, like pushed off from the dock, just really crappy warm up. I mean, we were like 10 minutes in and just like not going well. And the coach canceled practice. He was like, if you all can't get it together, this is over. We're going back and we're erging. And it was just, we just got punished, right, for not being able to focus in that moment. And yeah, like, and to think about the layers of anxiety, like you push off and things aren't set. And then you're like, this isn't going well. Is this something I'm doing? Oh, the person's not following me. Like, then you're getting mad at the person behind you. And then you're getting more anxious of what coach is thinking. And like, yeah, if we had all just been in that moment, given permission to stop and take a breath and refocus and not get punished, right? But get invited back to make that choice. Instead, the choice was taken away from us. Like, you don't have the choice to refocus. You're just going back to the ergs. It was so disempowering.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that sense of ownership is huge. And, you know, in a sport like rowing, there, you know, the athletes have choices and then they don't have choices, right? I mean, there's a limited amount of seats in the boat. So, you know, there are sort of limitations in terms of how you move through the sport. But I think in helping them feel and know that they have ownership over aspects of it is, I think, helps with that trust, right? And building that relationship with your coaches where, you know, they know that they're going to be supported. They know that we're giving them, we're never going to ask them to do something that they can't do. And that's often a fear, right? Where it's like, oh, that starting split's really fast. I don't know if I can start there, but it's always based on previous performance, right? It's not something we're pulling out of thin air. And certainly when we're starting, you know, the year, the semester, depending on the kind of work that we've done during the breaks, sometimes it's a little slower and that's okay. And knowing that you can only get faster, right? And if you're in that place and you maintain speed, that still falls within the sort of the parameters that we set in terms of how to approach the workout, right? And how do we want to train our race plan? If we're going to do something on race day, we can't just expect to magically be able to sustain a base speed if we haven't been practicing that day to day. Right. And so that sense of ownership of like, this is my piece and I take pride in it. And one of our team principles is owning your role and your own success. Right. And that's owning the things that you didn't do, right? Where, you know, like, hey, I didn't, you know, my lower back was a little sore and I didn't see the trainer for 2 weeks. Right. Well, that's, you know, like you've got to be your own advocate, right? Like that's on you to make sure that we're creating time to do that. But then also owning the gray parts, right? Where, you know, this is a starting split I was given. I felt really good. I chose to go faster. I felt better in the middle of the piece. I chose to go even faster and I PR'd, right? And owning the success in that as well. And so, you know, in an effort to yeah, just create that ownership. And, you know, cause we're as coaches, we're not out there with them. We do not participate. And I think this is also different from most sports. We don't participate in the race experience with our athletes, right? In the game day experience, we shove them from the dock and we see them an hour later. You know, we are up and down, hopefully recalling some of our mindfulness tools to keep ourselves calm as we pace up and down the shore. But it's a waiting game for us, right? And they're off on their own. I mean, we need to make sure that when we shove them off the dock, they are equipped with everything they need because they're running the show. You know, we just get to spectate and, you know, hope that we can execute everything we've been working on. And so it does us well to, yeah, to recognize the opportunities for ownership in that.
Yeah. Well, so sorry, Tim, I didn't mean to talk over you. Just real quick. Like I was thinking this anyway, and then you just gave this beautiful visual, right? How you're talking about empowering your athletes, but as a coach, that requires you to let go. That requires you to trust them. And I realize that in a way that's you controlling what you can control, right? You and how empowering that might be for you, but how that empowerment comes from letting go. And so I don't know if you can speak to that. Like you're talking about literally letting them go, pushing them off into the water and, yeah, you know, we'll see you at the finish kind of thing. What is that like for you as a coach? And has that shifted at all through the work you're doing with Tim, with mindfulness?
Oh, absolutely. That's funny because I had never thought about that, but we were just having a conversation this morning about, we're doing our first 2000 meter piece on the rowing machine tomorrow. And it's capped at a very low rate. And we were talking about the approach and we're going to be starting slow, based on, you know, sort of the progression of where they should be given, you know, the rate of strokes per minute and how that translates with the speed that they go, but that's at a cardio pace. And it's going to be slower than what they're capable of, but we're going to do it again next week. Right. And so looking at that and saying, yeah, okay, we're starting slow, but like they get to take it where they want to. Like we want them to choose to go fast and have fun. And I'm less concerned with what the end result is. And at this point in February, more concerned with that process, where this is a piece on the rowing machine that brings with it a lot of anxiety and just in general in our sport and in the culture. And there's so much pressure to perform, whatever that means, and, you know, and do whatever. And so I had never thought of the concept of myself letting it go, but that's like literally the conversation I had this morning with my assistants, where it's like, they got to take it. It's theirs. They're going to finish this piece. They're going to say, get up and say, I knew I can go faster. Awesome. We're going to do this again next week. So now you have a better sense of where you are. Right. And so for me as a coach, if you asked me this 5 years ago, I would have given you a very different answer. And I think it's been through a lot of coaching mistakes that I've made, right, in imposing those expectations and, you know, really focusing on that end result. And I think claiming to focus on the process, but not in the same way that I do now. I think I was very fortunate enough to work for a head coach a few years ago. After being a head coach, I moved back into an assistant role and was able to sort of watch him manage the psychological aspect of all of this and was like, oh my gosh, we're making training fun. And it's not, and that doesn't mean that it's not hard. You know, there are days where they are working hard, but it is so much more on the athletes to drive that experience. And our job is just sort of be the conduit, right? Like we're the guide. We take what they've done and it just creates a sense of trust. And, you know, we sort of had to go back to that this semester, where the hope is that, you know, with enough experience with me, the athletes get to a point where they're training consistently enough and know where they should be, that they can manage that on their own. I think with the pandemic, things, you know, have obviously been really complicated. And so we sort of needed to go back to basics this spring. And I was like, all right, after a couple of weeks, I was like, I'm taking over. We're going to give you all starting splits. And I think I got some raised eyebrows because some of them were a little slow, but they finished the workout and they're like, yeah, that was manageable. Right. And we can build towards a fitness base and add volume and start to, you know, with rowing, you've got two stressors, volume and intensity. And you don't ever want to do both at once. You don't want to turn both dials up at once. It's one or the other. And in creating that ownership and that sense of control and bringing the mindfulness practice in we can dial, you know, one of the two stressors up and not have it be catastrophic, right? Where it's like, yeah, we're going to add in a little bit more volume this week. On this workout, we're going to go a little bit more intensely based on what you've done before. That is a very different approach from my first 6 to 8 years of coaching, and it pays off. And it, but it also, as a coach, it also requires a lot of patience, because you're like, ah, you know, you think about where you want to be in May, and it's like, all right, I need to take a step back. Or in February, this does, doing these little things will add up to the bigger things, and you know, you just sort of retrain them. We had to, yeah, go back to basics, relearn, remember that this is how we've been approaching training. And they get back into it and they're like, okay, this makes sense. I'm seeing the numbers trend in the way that they're supposed to be. And that makes sense given where we want to go. And they just enjoy, the work is more fulfilling. And so it's been a big lesson for me in terms of managing that, and having a team at the end of the season. It's like, we did everything we said we were going to do. I mean, it worked. So yeah.
Yeah. And it just, I mean, I hear you talking about this like very kind of fundamental shift of like the empowerment leading to like these workouts feeling like they're moving toward like achieving potential rather than avoiding failure.
Yes.
Right. Like, which is such an important shift. And I mean, as we've talked about certainly a lot on this podcast, right, the culture of fear that is often just part and parcel of sport. And to, yeah, to actually allow athletes to feel like, even if they finish a slow workout, it's their numbers, it's where they're at, like that's an accomplishment. You can feel good about that rather than like, oh, I'm like so far away from where I want to be, or I didn't hit the splits I was supposed to hit. Like that can just be so demoralizing and add so much anxiety.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you haven't invested the time to maintain a fitness base, you know, over a summer break or winter break for whatever reason. You know, everyone's in a different place. And I remember it was either the first or second year working with you, Tim, we talked about the word should, mm-hmm. right? And so a lot of the focus is, okay, where are we right now? You know, were you significantly faster 2 years ago? Yeah, sure. But that's not where we are right now. And that's okay. Right. And bringing in that piece of compassion where it's like, I get that you want to be at this speed. We're just not there right now. And that's fine. Right. So let's focus on where we are, make sure that we're using the approach that makes the most sense and will get us closer to where we want to be, and remove those layers of judgment and of fear and of disappointing teammates or coaches, where it's like, no, just follow the directions. They're super simple, and you'll have more fun as you get fitter and go faster. And, you know, because you'll have removed those layers of pressure, and we can still do what we want to do. So.
Well, in a way too, I mean, I think this goes back to what I was asking about a moment ago, but I could see how it removes some pressure from you as well. Right. I mean, you were talking about patience being so important. I think it also, it takes a lot of courage to let go in this way, because there's a lot of pressure on you as a coach to get results, right? Your job security depends on it. And to recognize, okay, the best way for me to get results is to empower my athletes and to give them the tools. That is a real act of bravery and self-control on your part. But I also imagine that would be really liberating in a way and make it more fun for you. You're not sitting there sweating over every data point that you get and wondering what it's going to mean and whether, you know, your team's going to do what it should do. Like you were just saying, it's fascinating. You know, I so often we talk about the impact of trainings like this on athletes, but to hear what you're saying today, it's really highlighting for me how it can change an entire approach to coaching and just what it feels like to be a coach, the experience of being a coach.
Yeah. It's there are moments where, you know, you're like, do we have enough time? Right. Especially this semester, right. Where, you know, we're having to sort of revert back to the basics or the foundation of training and the approach that we started with them 2.5 years ago. And I think too, with just the disruptions of this year, I mean, we were shut down for all of January because of everything that was taking place in DC. you know, and you start back up again, and you know, the priority is to win COVID. Right? I mean, that's before we even get to the training piece, right? Is just keep the team healthy. And so there are definitely days where we're looking at numbers and I'm like, all right, we have time. You know, we're moving in a good direction. It's going to be okay. You know, and, but this is where we are. And I think it is, sometimes it's easier to be more patient on some days than others. Sure. But I think it really, I think what really sort of solidifies that, and it is hard to make that choice because instinctually you want to push, you want to go hard. You want to, you know, you want to like, let's be tough now, right? Let's go hard now. Let's make mistakes now. And it's, I think if the team is ready to do that, then it's appropriate, but we're not ready to do that right now. And that's okay. You know, and I think what reinforces, my confidence in making these decisions is just watching them after they're done with these pieces, watching them after they're done with the workouts where, you know, my guess is tomorrow, you know, we're doing 2000 meters at a 24, base pacing is usually about a 32 plus. So we're on the lower end in terms of, strokes per minute, but it's just a power per stroke. And we're taking, you know, trying to strip this testing piece of the stigma of it's 2000 meters. This is what coach is going to use to put me in whatever boat. And this is so judgmental. And it's like, no, we're going to have fun with it. And I know that when we finish the piece tomorrow, they're going to get up and be like, oh my God, like that went by so fast. That's so crazy. Like, oh, I'm ready to do another one. I know I can start so much faster. And just hearing, you know, hearing that excitement and getting into the point where getting the team to the point where when we do a 2K full go, right? When we do a 2K without restrictions on how fast they can go, they are chomping at the bit and they want to do that. And that is so valuable. And it requires a lot of patience. It really does. Because we stretch it out over the course of a month and a half. And it's like, I hope we get there. You know, I hope we're in a good place at this point in the spring. But the behavior that you see when they have that sense of control, when they're finding training to be fulfilling and even on, you know, and not everyone's going to feel great coming into practice, right? There are a lot of stressors out there. They're managing a lot. You know, and some days they come in and they're like, man, I'm really not feeling it today. And it's like, you can go a little slower. That's okay. You know, and they'll start, as long as they're following directions, they'll start slower, you know, and they'll have it, you know, they'll have a workout where it's consistent, or maybe they'll get a little bit faster, but it's not normally where they are speed wise, you know, and they'll pop up and they'll be a little disappointed, but you know, but then you talk about, well, today's goal is just to finish the workout and get it done, right? And not be so overwhelmed and not be judgmental. Just come in and be like, if you have 70%, just give all 70%. That's okay. That's still a step in the right direction. And so then in working up towards the testing pieces, knowing that one workout isn't going to derail your season, just like one test isn't going to derail your season. But yeah, it does. There are days where I have to remind myself that this does pay off long-term, because I think for us as coaches, you want to see that immediate gratification. You want to see where we are speed-wise. And so I would be lying if I said that you know, I was convinced all the time and felt really good about seeing these numbers sure. all the time. But I think in watching, you know, in my experience as the assistant coach, and we did not incorporate mindfulness training, but you could see those aspects in how the physical training was set up. Mm-hmm. And then here, having as a head coach, being able to make that choice and say, all right, this is what we're going to do. And bringing in that kind of training that I was observing as an assistant coach. And then explicitly talking about the mental aspect. Yeah. That first year, just watching that play out, I was like, yeah, this works. I mean, if I did anything different, I would be dumb and I would deserve the results that I get. So, it's unfortunate because we were robbed of a spring season last year. And I think we had a rough patch, during winter training and, you know, really needed to hone into those mindfulness skills. And in those last 2 weeks before we got sent home, because of COVID, the team collectively made a choice and it was very athlete driven. I mean, we had a meeting actually the day after one of our 2000 meter pieces, they just came in low energy, dragging, not excited to be there. And we sort of had this moment after practice where we talked about being able to decide what kind of environment we have at practice. And we had a senior who's just coming back from injury. And she was like, guys, we get to decide. Like, this is ours. This is our space. This is our environment. We get to choose how we come in here. You know, we did this training last year. This isn't anything new. There are no surprises. And those next 2 weeks, I mean, it was this flip switched so hard and in such a great direction where our Tuesday afternoon workouts are there. We do our anaerobic threshold workouts on Tuesday afternoons. And those are hard. I mean, those are not, I wouldn't call them fun necessarily. And they came in, and this was the week, literally 3 days before we got sent home because of COVID. They were skipping around. They were laughing. They were stretching and just super chatty. And that's not how we normally approach Tuesdays. And one of our associate ADs happened to be there for the warm-up. And he was like, Coach, I don't know what you did, what kind of like, you know, like reverse psychology is like, but it's working. And I was like, I didn't do anything. I'm like, they chose to come in here like this. And you could just feel there's just such good energy, which made getting sent home so much harder because we had just arrived at this point where we were like, okay, this is who we want to be. This is who we can be. Yeah. And we're seeing that also in the results. And so the hope is we can get there sooner this year and, you know, be able to see the spring through.
Yeah. Well, and I just want to push back slightly because you did do something like, right. You empowered them to make that choice. You put them in the position to have that discussion, right. To own that choice, to bring a different attitude, right. You gave them the space to do that.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, that's significant.
Yeah.
So, well, this has been awesome. I really appreciate you making the time to talk with us, Marcy, and for sharing what it's been like for you. And certainly best of luck to you and your team as you return now to competition. And these are interesting times, but I'm so glad to hear that you've been able to, I guess right now we're sort of in the dead of winter and when there's snow on the ground here in DC, but that you'll be returning to the water soon and you guys are training. That's really exciting. And good news for us, you know, as we're trying to come out of this pandemic.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. We got to take every little opportunity we can. So we're certainly really grateful for that.
Yeah. And we also just want to take a moment and thank Dr. Carol Glass for all of her support of our podcast behind the scenes and our producer, Taylor Brown of EnduroMind. If any listeners out there would like to connect with us through our MSBE Institute, you're welcome to visit our website at www.mindfulsportperformance.org. You are also welcome to check out our Facebook page, our MSBE Facebook page. Our podcast has a companion YouTube site now where we do post our meditations, including the meditation that Tim led today. So be sure you check that out. And our podcast also has a presence on Instagram. You can follow it at mindful_sport_podcast. And you are welcome to connect with me on Twitter, Dr. Keith Kaufman, and my handle is @mindfulsportdoc. So lots of ways to get in touch. And again, thank you, Marcy, for your time. And we will see you guys next time.
Yeah, thanks so much, Marcy. And thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thank you.